the Capital Investments Committee for Tuesday, March 26th will come to order. The first item on the agenda is House File 874, Representative Wasilak. Representative Wick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill we have before us, House File Number 874, would appropriate $3,580,000 from the bond proceeds to fund a couple of portions of the Lake Lynx Trail in the White Bear Lake and Delwood area. And I have a testifier here who can speak to a little bit about the Lake Lynx Trail and what this funding would help us with.
Okay. Thank you.
Which one do I get? Go ahead.
Am I supposed to go to you now, Representative Fisher?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have House File 1326, and this is also another segment of Lake Lynx Trail that is my district. It would be for $500,000. That would be split between the city of White Bear Lake and Birchwood to finish a section on the south side of White Bear Lake. And the reason we're both here today with Representative Wasilak is because we have a joint testifier who will be addressing our both sections here.
And your testifier is?
Our testifier is Mike Brooks from the Lake Lynx Trail Association, and I'd like him to go ahead and make his presentation.
It's all yours.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Michael Brooks. I share the chair of the Lake Lynx Association, a Minnesota nonprofit, with Mr. Steve Wolgamut, who unfortunately was unable to attend this morning's hearing. Lake Lynx was organized in 2017 to improve safety, mobility, and access for people of all ages who walk or use a bicycle for transportation or recreation in the White Bear Lake area. Our current focus for the last few years has been the completion of a safe 10-mile route around White Bear Lake. This trail around the lake was identified in the 2001 Regional Vision, the Lake Lynx Network Trail Master Plan. It was seen as an essential segment for all of the local lakeside communities as well as Washington and Ramsey counties. This is not our first trip to the Capitol. We were fortunate to receive funding from the legislature in 2017 for preliminary engineering of our South Shore, Birchwood Road, and Matamidi-Delwood segments of the route. And in 2018, we received funding for two of the segments identified in the 10-mile route. Our remaining segments, the remaining two key segments, are our most dangerous. They fall far short of the identified 4 to 6 feet of separation for motorized traffic cited in MnDOT's 2013 publication, Minnesota's Best Practices for Pedestrian and Bicycle Safety. Even for on-road bicycle facilities, the recognized space requirements for a bicycle is 4 feet of operation and 3 feet of separation for motorized traffic. This margin of safety is non-existent in the corridors we are working to improve. Their skinny gravel and glass-filled shoulders of State Highway 96 and 244 compromise the safety of all users of the transportation system in our area, as well as area residents. And these popular transit corridors and their underutilized public right-of-way need to be reimagined to fit the vision of the balanced transportation system so often espoused by public agencies at all levels. Would the committee have any questions of me at this time?
Mr. Brooks, what about, what was the money that you received in 2017?
We received $259,000.
2018?
$4.4 million, excuse me.
2019, you're asking for two different appropriations. They are?
We have one bill is $3.5 million, and the other is $500,000.
And then what's the local share in all that?
We have a breakout if the committee was given. The breakout that we have now is that our non-state percentage is at 77% based on previous work and contributions of land.
Mr. Brooks, I don't have any other information than what you've just told me on here, and there was nothing in my folder.
I will apologize on that. I received it yesterday and thought I'd forwarded on it. I did not. I apologize. Okay. I was trying to print it out this morning. My printer stopped
You'll
working.
You'll see that I get it because I have yes. a folder for every single project that comes before us. Okay. And all the information is in that folder, and I'm counting on that information as I count my dollars.
Yes, of yes. course.
As we go along. Hey, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so what is the total cost of the Matt Dean Trail?
Our ask last year at the legislature was $8.8 million. What we are doing is we're working to alleviate cost. We cut out a section in Matamidi that was $4 million, and we elected to use quiet streets. Right now, we believe that the dollars that we're being asked for would represent the minimum required to build a safe and effective trail in the public right-of-way.
Thank you. And Madam Chair, it's not really the Matt Dean Trail. He probably wouldn't care if you didn't do it in Delwood anyway.
I didn't get that, but it's all right. Any other questions, Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for our representatives, and sir, thank you for coming.
Yes.
Senator Wieger, thank you for crossing the street. It's very popular in this area, and the connections are wonderful, and people definitely use these trails and want to, so thank you for bringing it.
And does this trail connect with another state trail?
Yes, this trail, when it is completed, will connect with an RBTN, which will go to the Gateway Trail, which is a state trail. We also have other regional trails at the southern end that are being completed. This is really kind of in the center, if you can imagine, a kind of a train roundhouse, in that the trail around the lake kind of spins off and connects to a variety of regional and state assets.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Lippert. House file 2511.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, House File 2511 is a $2.5 million request for Milltown State Trail connections in Northfield, but it's also about a very, very busy intersection. So on the south side of Northfield, there's a four-way stop that's extremely busy because it's between the Northfield High School, the Northfield Middle School, Bridgewater Elementary School. There's a senior living area on one side of the intersection. There's also the Northfield Senior Center on the other side of the intersection. So as you can imagine, there's a tremendous amount of vehicle traffic as school begins and as school ends, bus traffic, a lot of pedestrian traffic, and with children and seniors are moving across this intersection as well. So the city is going through a process of upgrading this intersection, and this request is for separating vehicle traffic from pedestrian traffic by most likely digging some tunnels underneath the intersection for pedestrian traffic that will also connect to the trail system in Northfield that's in the process of connecting to trails to the south and trails to the north as well. But I'll turn it over to Ben Martig, our city administrator, to say more about this project and proposal.
Mr. Martig.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. So as city administrator with the city of Northfield, thank you for the opportunity today. As Representative Lippert indicated, the project is scheduled here for 2020 construction. We're working with the DNR on finalizing the location of the Milltowns Trail through Northfield through some planning documents. In your previous appropriations to the DNR, once we set that, we're going to begin construction design phase for segments throughout the city this year. So there is momentum happening with the Milltown State Trail in a community that is obviously a destination for tourists and for biking, and so it really makes sense for this project to move ahead. We have been working on, it's a little bit of complexity to it as we're kind of coordinating the finalization of the trail location. So this is a major intersection that, as representative indicated, a lot of different users are coming in at this point. So it's really important for us to have grade separated improvements to connect in with this trail segment with the Milltowns Trail. So the funding summary, we do have MnDOT funding, about $1.4 million in MnDOT funding, and about $460,000 in local state aid funds that we're using to complete the project, in addition to the request of $2.5 million that we're asking from the committee. Thank you for your time.
So you're willing to wait until the $220 million bill?
Well, we're beginning design. Excuse me, Madam Chair. We are beginning design right now, so the window of opportunity is really this session if we want to try and be able to complete it with the deadline timing. So if we can get the funding now, we'd include it with our project. We'll be bidding it probably in early 2020. So the timing is really either now or not at all related to this particular project for this
session. Have you received the $1.4 million from DOT already?
Yes.
And that designed it and so forth?
We're in the process of seeking proposals, Madam Chair, for design work to begin. But we are working with MnDOT related to all the processes that they require on the intersection project.
Okay. Is this last map that you have in your handout, is that construction that's completed, that roundabout thing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is the project. This is a conceptual design drawing that shows that construction project that's scheduled for 2020. So we'll be moving into design phase once we select the consultant that's scheduled for Tuesday's council meeting. So that is not built. We have four stop signs currently. And as the picture shows, we get quite a bit of traffic congestion, so the roundabout has not yet been built.
And so you're going and the idea in this area is for you to go underground.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, all of the connecting segments of trail would be underground to be off of that busy roadway. And so the reason that the timing is so important is because we'll have the box culverts that we'd be putting in, we'd be doing at the same time as the construction projects, and hence the importance of doing it at the same time versus if we do it later, we'd have to impact all of the work that we've done.
And with the total amount of money that you're working on for this trail connection and the trail that's planned and the underground work, the total amount of money is for the trail is how much?
$2.5 million is for the entire, just for the connecting trails.
For the connecting trails. And how much of a match is Northfield making?
Thank you, Madam Chair. $460,000.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Claflin, House File 1461. Please begin.
Good morning. I've brought House File 1461 in front of you today. This bill would help the city of South St. Paul fund a project to replace the heating, cooling, ventilation system in the Doug Woog Arena. I have to catch myself every time I say that because I still want to call it Wakota. It is located on the bluffs in South St. Paul and has been home to a lot of hockey. This is an older rink that needs some refurbishment. And I have Chris Esser with me today to talk a little bit more about the details of the project.
Mr. Esser? Osser?
Esser, E-S-S-E-R.
Oh. Mr. Esser?
Yes. My name is Chris Esser. I'm the Parks and Recreation Director for the City of South St. Paul. Thank you, Representative Claflin. Thank you for your time this morning, Madam Chair. Doug Woog Arena is one of the most historic arenas in the state of Minnesota. It's been in operation for over 50 years and services a lot of the metro area, a lot of the southeast area of the metro. And so what we're requesting with this bill is we have year-round use at our arena. Believe it or not, that arenas do get used in the summertime. We have two sheets of ice, complements of the 1997 first round of the Mighty Ducks bill, thanks to Senator James Metzen, who was a local champion for our town. And when we added that second sheet of ice, what we do is we have one sheet in operation completely year-round. That was the newer sheet that was built in 1997. Then the older sheet that was built in the 1960s, we take the ice out of, and then we use that for year-round events, such as we have a list there. We posted roller derby. We've had home and garden shows. We've had a rodeo, believe it or not, in there. And so in order to maximize the use of our building, we need to be able to cool it in the summer. I know that sounds a little counterintuitive, that it's an ice arena. Wouldn't it be cool in the summer? Actually, you do need an HVA system. Because if you just turn the floor on, it would just create condensation and make the place a mess. So what we do is we want to maximize the year-round use for the whole region. So we're requesting $350,000 with a $50,000 local match by the City of South St. Paul to be able to install that cooling system for the summer so that we can maximize the use for our region and attract more people to the arena when it's non-ice use to maximize the use of the building. I see on the agenda you're going to hear a lot about ice arenas today. You're probably wondering how we fit into the puzzle of the R22 conversion that you're going to be hearing a lot about. The citizens of South St. Paul did pass a park referendum in 2014 before a lot of this R22 conversion. So we did solve our own problem. As part of that referendum, we had three components. One of the components was a remodel of our arena, and it was primarily funded for switching over our system from R22 to an ammonia system. So we've already solved that problem for ourselves. Thanks to our residents in passing that park referendum. So what our ask today does not have to do with the refrigeration system. It has to do with basically cooling of the space in the summertime so that when we take the ice out, we can maximize the use of the building for the region and for some cost recovery that we do for operation of the arena.
Okay. How much has the Doug Wood... Woog Arena received state funds in the past other than the Mighty Ducks funds?
Madam Chair, Doug Woog Arena has not, other than the original Mighty Ducks bill in 1997, and that was, again, construction of a second sheet of ice, making it from a one-sheet facility to a two-sheet facility. But moving forward from 1997, we have not received any state funding.
Do you remember the amount in 97?
Madam Chair, I do not. That was a little bit before my time. I think at the time, if I was to estimate, I think if you build another sheet of ice with a roof and everything that needs to be done, I was guessing in 1997 dollars, it would have been maybe in the $2 million range as an estimate, but I'm not sure, 100%.
I don't know if Mighty Ducks ever got up that high, but...
Maybe
it was
thinking
Jim Metzen's baby, it might have. All right, questions? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Coughlin. Thank you for bringing this. This is definitely a regional center. I mean, a lot of people come from all over there, and great legacy, especially on the women's side. The women have been dominant for years. But just a comment. Will this work make the ice faster? Because it seems like as I age... former Governor Plenty gets slower, and so do I. So I don't know if can you do anything with that,
Madam Chair? Anything's possible, certainly. But maybe what we can do is if we do provide some comfort in the summertime, you can put on your inline skates and come and try roller hockey instead, and that'll make you really fast.
Let's not have him try anything new. Let's not do that. Any further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Representative Daniels, House File 2172.
Good
Representative Daniels, Northern Lynx Trail and Faribault.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2172 is trying to get a safe link between parts that are actually under construction right now, the bike trail from our little, what do you call it, the park and ride in Faribault is going north, and we have the underground tunnels already done to go to the east to the fairgrounds, but there's a railroad track in the middle of that project. And so this is mainly so we can get underneath the railroad track to keep the traffic off of the main road, because there's not much shoulder space. If you see the pictures on there, it's probably only a 3-foot shoulder on there for bicycles and walkers. So that's our project this time. And I brought with me the Parks and Recs Superintendent, Paul Pinansky, to kind of fill you in on the details. But we're getting there. We're all matched up going all the way down to Mankato. And this will get us one step closer to going up to Northfield and all the way to Red Wing. So with that, I'll turn it over to Paul.
Mr. Pinansky, welcome. Sell us on the idea of going under a railroad.
Madam Chair and members of the Capital Investment Committee, thanks so much for allowing me this opportunity to present the Northern Lynx Trail request to you. I'm the Parks Recreation Director in Faribault. We've been working very hard to make trail connections in Faribault with two state trails in town and the third coming at a later date. It's very important to link our local trail system to these trails. The two state trails that currently exist in Faribault are the Cicada Singing Hills State Trail and the Milltown State Trail. Someday we will also have the Prairie Wildflower State Trail coming up south from Austin through Owatonna. We have completed most of the trails going through Faribault, but cannot get linked to the state trail system because of a large obstacle. We have the Canadian Pacific Rail cutting off our access to the state trails. This request is to make that connection a reality. Being able to put a culvert under the railroad and connecting with the state trail system, which is only about 0.2 miles. Over the past few years, we've added a mile and a half of local trail to bring the trail to where it is today. Currently, residents and visitors must go out onto Highway 3 and go under a very narrow railroad underpass to connect with more trails. Speed limits for cars in this area is over 40 miles an hour, and there is only about 3 feet of shoulder under the underpass. This trail, when connected, will allow access from the state trail users to the Faribault's largest park, North Alexander, home to softball complexes, baseball fields, picnic shelters, Cannon River, and all the recreational benefits that can offer, the ice arena, the Rice County Fairgrounds, and the school district's football and track complex. And then once they pass through that, they're able to access the downtown of Faribault, bringing much economic development potential to Faribault. Not only riders coming to town, but also 4 motels in Faribault are located extremely close to the trails and have full access to them. These trails will allow those staying in town to venture downtown to restaurants and other businesses, as well as to the Riverbend Nature Center area. Currently, the DNR is completing a section of the Milltowns Trail in Faribault from just west of the connection we desire south to White Sands Trailhead Facility, which connects directly with the Cicada Singing Hills State Trail, and from there goes down to Mankato. This section will be completed this summer. When completed and when the Northern Lynx Trail is completed, our residents and visitors will be able to come from the west part of town and connect to the east side and vice versa. In your packet of information, you all see a current resolution passed by our City Council. They support this trail segment, understanding that there will be future maintenance needed as at city expense. Again, thank you for this opportunity, and I hope you'll consider funding this section of trail for all the residents of Faribault as well as our visitors. Are there any questions?
What's your ask?
We're asking for $750,000.
Who have you been working with to get that number?
We have an engineering firm that we worked on when we did previous sections of the trail, and they gave us an estimate of what it would take to get through this part.
And do you want this to be part of the 2019 bonding bill?
If possible.
Or the 2020 bonding bill?
Madam Chair, if possible, 2019, but we would take 2020.
Have you gone through the MMB project design?
We have
and request through MMB, Department of Budget Management.
We have not.
That has a process for going through, for getting accepted and having a tour visit by the committee.
we have had tours through town that have looked at this link. I don't know. We, to my knowledge, we have not actually gone through that process, full process, though.
It's a good process. It's very helpful.
Madam
Representative
Chair?
Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did have the bonding committee come down 2 years ago, and we gave a tour of the trail that was already, I guess, approved, and we were in the process of building that. And then we also went down to where the fairgrounds and this railroad track is, and showed them just exactly what the situation was. And the majority of the cost is digging underneath the railroad. It's quite a deal. But safety-wise, like Mr. Pabanski said, it's very unsafe. The cars are going 45 to 50 miles an hour, and there's about a three-foot shoulder to try to ride on. So it's one of the worst spots we have in Faribault, if not the worst.
Did the bonding committee that did tour offer up money?
Pardon?
Did you receive any money before for this trail or for a trail?
Madam Chair, we have not for this section of the trail. We have requested funds in the past, both through bonding as well as through legacy funding, and we have not received any funding for this yet.
Are you on the list for the Parks and Trails Fund plan in legacy?
Madam Chair, yes, we are.
Priority list?
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This is not a question specific to this project, but now that we are seem to be contemplating adding local projects to the bonding proposal from this body this year, will MMB be evaluating those local projects?
I have not asked them that yet.
Thank you.
I imagine they will if we required it, or if we have them wait until 2020, then it would be timely because they have to start their applications in May. So, thank you for the question. Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sorry, I may have missed this, but if you get this particular spot finished, are you connected to the Cannon Valley Trail? Would this then complete the thing from Mankato to Redway?
Madam Chair, what this particular connection would do is it would connect our local trails directly to the Milltown State Trail, which eventually will connect into Northfield and then up to Cannon Falls and then into Red Wing. So it's not there yet, but it's a process that I'm pretty sure you'll see representatives coming forward in the future as the DNR is acquiring the property between Faribault and Northfield at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Thank you.
Representative Davids, House File 952. And I was hoping you would have a map because I looked on my DOT map today and trying to find that town from you're starting at Preston or ending at Preston, I'm not sure. And then there was a town that started with C, Carmona. I couldn't find that on my DOT map.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, members. It doesn't exist as a city or as a town, but it is a little bit west of Preston. And you'll know when you're there.
Oh, okay.
It is part, Madam Chair, it's part of a township. But it's not the township. It's, in fact, at one time I believe it was going to be the Fillmore County seat, but then Joe Rolette went and took the documents. No, it wasn't Joe Rolette. It was Picketran. Took the documents from Carmona and took them into Preston, and hence the county seat is in Preston.
Oh.
A lot of history.
I see.
Can you imagine?
I see. Well, am I going to get to Carmona by bike, or am I walking, or am I scooter, or what?
Madam Chair, you can't get there by bike or walking because there's not a trail there yet. And that's what we're trying to
There's
do.
There's nothing there?
Well, I suppose you could take the township road.
Oh.
Or a canoe. You take a canoe.
Okay, and you're asking for $5 million?
Yeah, we cut it way back. We were going to go for 10, but we thought we could work with 5. Half price today.
Mr. Hoffman, do you wish to tell us about the project?
Yes, Chair Murphy, members of the committee, my name is Joe Hoffman. I'm the city administrator for the city of Preston. And while this topic may be new to some of the members, it's certainly not new to this committee. And while I was preparing my testimony today, I went through our file and came across this picture, which is a former or a then-chair, Erdahl, wearing a Forestville Trail helmet. And I think this was during the House Capital Investment Tour of 2017. And while I'm not submitting this as part of my testimony today into the record, it did remind me that I should invite this committee to come to Preston again, or come anytime, and see our project in person. And we'd welcome the opportunity to get a photo op with you, Madam Chair, in the Forestville Trail.
And then you post that forevermore wherever you go?
Just in committee hearings.
Ah.
Yes.
Okay.
I would like to start out just with a review of the maps at your request. So page 2 of the handout that you have there shows the regional trail map of the Root River and Harmony Preston Valley State Trails, also the Bluffland Trail System. You can see Lanesboro is in the middle of the map. The green trail across the top stretching from Houston to Fountain is the Root River Trail. The orange trail running north and south from Harmony to Lanesboro is the Preston-Harmony Valley Trail, and the segment we're talking about today is the yellow segment on the left-hand side running from Preston to Carimona. And if you go a few more pages in, I think around page 5, we have a more detailed map of the project we're discussing today. It's an aerial photo. On the far right, you'll see a pink or fuchsia line, which is the existing state trail. The blue line is the Preston In-Town Trail that the city built to connect the two state trails. The red and yellow dashed line is the portion of the Forestville Trail that's already been constructed by the state. And then the rest of the yellow line is what we're here today to discuss. So with that being said, the Forestville Trail project began in the early 1990s. I believe we're going on more than 25 years now at this point. All of the land for the 6-mile Preston to Carimona segment that we're discussing today has been owned by the state since 2002, and the DNR completed the trail master plan in 2003, and construction began on the segment in 2012. This trail is a legislatively authorized state trail, and it is on the priority project list for the Parks and Trails Council. This trail holds the DNR's Tier 1 designation, as it is a destination trail that will connect Forestville State Park, Mystery Cave, and the Forestville Historic Site to the Root River and Harmony Preston Valley Trails. While the segment we're discussing today won't quite get us to the park, it will get us to a trailhead in Carimona, and from that point, the ride into the park is about 2.5 miles on quiet country roads. The Forestville Trail follows the narrowing valley of the South Branch of the Root River as it nears the state park. This will be an exceptionally scenic section of trail, but that, of course, comes at a cost. While the Preston to Carimona segment is just 6 miles, it will require the construction of 7 bridges, and that is why the cost is what it is. There are certainly cheaper trails to be built, but many of us agree with Craig Blummer's quote. Craig was a longtime DNR trails employee. His quote's on, I believe, on page 1 of the packet. That this will be the most scenic segment of the Blufflands Trail System. And for those of you familiar with the trails in Bluff Country, that is truly saying something. It's important to point out that the segment is also an active project. To date, the legislature has invested $1 million, thank you very much, and the trail is about 20% complete with the construction of 2 bridges and 1 mile of trail. And the remaining cost of the Preston to Carimona segment is estimated at $5.3 million. Even though this is a state project, there's been substantial local match. Members of the Preston community spent the better part of 20 years doing the legwork to acquire dozens of parcels for the trail route, and the city of Preston has invested about $200,000 constructing that in-town trail, that blue trail, that connects the two state trails. That's kind of the nuts and bolts of the trail project, but I'd also like to speak briefly about the impact on the community and the region. Tourism continues to grow as an economic driver in scenic southeastern Minnesota. Investments in bike trails are repaid many times over in our hotels, restaurants, and retail stores, and many of those visitors come to Minnesota from outside the state. In 2014, non-motorized trail users spent about $2.7 billion in Minnesota. Our hospitality businesses can certainly tell you that these customers make a huge difference in their business's success. The Parks and Trails Council's 2015 Trail User Survey estimated there were 1.8 million trail users statewide, and the Preston Trailhead location had an estimated 86,000 users, and that's in a community of 1,300 residents. We're confident that we would see thousands more people coming to our region and to Forestville State Park if we were able to extend the bike trail to Carimona. The creation of bike trails in our area has also been fantastic for allowing better access for trout anglers. Trout fishing has become almost as popular as riding the trails in Preston for outdoor recreation, and we definitely see an economic impact from this. Anglers stay in our hotels, eat at our restaurants, buy supplies, and visit the Preston National Trout Center. So in closing, we are pleased, very pleased with the partnership that we've enjoyed with the DNR through the years to bring this project this far. But we do ask with the deepest respect that the DNR follow through on its commitment and finish the project at this time.
Mr. Hoffman, are the seven bridges all going to look like that?
I think that's pretty typical. These bridges are, well, they typically just carry bikes. They're designed to hold ambulances or emergency response vehicles as well. And so they are definitely built to a higher standard than you might expect.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a couple of my questions have already been answered now. It's 5 miles from Preston to Carimona?
Approximately 5 to 6, yes.
And, Madam Chair, that cave is quite impressive. I was, you know, very surprised. I think it's a, you know, worthwhile that apparently the distance from Carimona to the park is easily obtained even without a new trail there. So I think it's something we should look strongly at. Representative Davids, I was wondering, will you be biking it or walking that trail mostly?
Well, I look at biking, and we do walk the trail also. Thank you, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Thank you, Madam Chair. That's why I insisted that the bridges be built so you could have an ambulance cross them.
thank you, Representative Davids. And I'll just comment that I went down that cave about 6 months after my knee replacement, so it was challenging then. I look forward to coming back and having an easier time.
Mr. Hoffman, as I read the bill, it says up to $5 million. And in your statement, you said that you've already made a $200,000 local communities made local matches on where you're at today. Are you offering to have another local match for this new part? And what's the minimum of up to?
Sure. Madam Chair, we are working on numbers that we would have received from the Minnesota DNR in 2013. We've escalated those numbers 3% a year, and so I mean, these are estimates at this time. Ultimately, this is a state project. The DNR would receive the funds, and they would be responsible for the engineering and the construction. And so we are advocating on behalf of the DNR at this time. As to whether the city is prepared for additional match, that is not a discussion we've had at this time. That is not something that we're anticipating. I think the local officials felt that they've already done their part of the trail project, and that's why we're here asking for the DNR to complete their share of it.
Representative Juergens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's some confusion here on caves. The Mystery Cave, is that different than the Niagara Cave? Are there two, or is it just the same cave, different name?
Madam Chair, those are two different caves. The Niagara Cave is south of Harmony and a little bit west, very close to the Iowa Line. Mystery Cave is over by the city of Cherry Grove, a little bit north of Cherry Grove, which you won't find on the map either.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Nornes, House File 849. Maybe we can make up a couple minutes here.
You know, if I could cut my question, Madam Chair.
I noticed. I know who talks. Representative Nornes.
Thank you for hearing. House File 849. Just to start with, I think all of you should have a handout in the information. Might be something you want to look at. And to speed this along, we're looking at some funds to help part of a trail in Otter Tail County. And the map on the inside of the brochure will show you how potentially scenic this is through the lake country of Otter Tail County. To testify about this requirement or ask today is Nick Leonard, representing Otter Tail County. So,
Mr. Leonard.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Nick Leonard with Otter Tail County. I'll try to catch you up. This is a 28-mile recreational trail that, as the name suggests, connects the communities of Pelican Rapids to Perham via beautiful Maplewood State Park. And this project actually was initiated in 2013 as a collaborative project between the City of Pelican Rapids, City of Perham, Otter Tail County, DNR, West Central Initiative, Partnership for Health. And they spent over 14 months working on this project, seeking public input, developed a master plan, received a designation of Trail of Regional Significance. And through that, the trail plan, as you see on the inside of your packet, has five segments, starting from the west, segment, Maplewood State Park segment, Silent Lake segment, McDonald segment, and East segment. And the request that I'm here for today specifically relates to the McDonald and Silent Lake segments of the trail. And I'd like to just make a couple comments about the project in general. First of all, I just want to stress that this has significant local support and local commitment. The east section of the trail going from Perham to County Highway 35 will begin construction in that portion of the trail this year. It was almost entirely funded by the county and will be done this fall, this spring, or this current summer as part of a county highway rebuild project. The other thing that I'd like to point out is that the county board has also approved and has begun working on specifically the engineering related to the detailed engineering related to the McDonald Lake and Silent Lake sections. So the county board has approved funding for that and is moving ahead with that so that we can, Madam Chair, be shovel ready. The other couple comments that I'd like to make is that this is a really important connection for the region as a whole. If you look at the front part of this packet, this is the first step to eventually connecting the Heartland and Central Lakes trails. As you can see, there's a big void in the middle of that area, and long term through this and additional spurs, this will eventually connect those two things, those two regional trails. Last thing I'll point out, I think our friends from Preston did a really good job talking about the economic impact of trails in general, so I won't rehash that data. But what I will say is that we're looking at this not just as a short-term investment, not just for short-term tourism-based economic impact. We look at this from the standpoint of how do we attract people to live and work in outstate greater Minnesota. We have hundreds of jobs right now that we could fill tomorrow in Otter Tail County if we had the workers. The state demographer predicts that we're going to have 3,500 fewer workers in 10 years than we currently have today. It's a scary reality as we look at it, and so we're looking at what are the types of things that people want to live and work in our community, and trails is certainly one of them. So with that, I thank you for your time and be glad to answer any questions.
Representative Erdahl, or Dean. I'm sorry. You said Dean.
Well,
said Dean.
Madam Chair, I think either of us would be happy to be called on by you. Quick question. The local match is pretty significant. How are you able to generate that type of revenue for the local match?
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, a couple ways that we've been able to do that. One is our county board. This started in 2013. County board has made a significant commitment to developing recreational trails in our area. So they've been, for lack of a better word, squirreling money away every year. So when we are fortunate to be able to secure some bonding, we have some match dollars available. So that's one way. The county board is also committed to, if there's a need to do some local bonding related to a project, they're also committed to that if there's a substantial enough project.
Thank you. And Mr. Leonard, is the trail that the county has participated in, the east part, so far, is that part of a road?
Madam Chair, it is part of a road rebuild, but it will be a standalone, separated trail. They were able to do it significantly more cost effectively because it's part of a road rebuild.
So there's no easements to get or anything. They've got the easement already.
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hills? Are there hills in there?
Lots.
I hate hills.
Lots of hills. But then there's lakes to counter that. So you get.
All right. Representative Dima, St. Joseph, House File 95. Now, this one probably is really intended for 2019 bill, right?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Because of the low number.
We are hopeful.
Please give us your pitch.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for hearing House File 95. This bill was originally brought to me by St. Joseph Mayor Rick Schultz and City Administrator Judy Werens, seeking an appropriation of $300,000 to pre-design, design, and construct and equip a parking lot, canoe access, and restroom facilities for East Park. East Park is located on the Sauk River within the city limits of St. Joseph. This will meet the community's growing needs and will draw visitors from around the region. With your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier, City Administrator Judy Werens.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you for allowing us to be here. As Representative Dimu said, I'm with the City of St. Joseph. We're located 8 miles west of the City of St. Cloud. East Park is pretty important to us. In 2004, the city worked with a developer who had plans to do a huge development, which has since fallen through. But part of the deal was that he would turn over to the city 93 acres along the Sauk River, and he would pay for some of the planning money for the park. So we finally finalized the park deal 2 years ago, and so the community went through an engagement process of what do you want to do with this. People park along the side of the road, and they canoe, they fish. And so we wanted to make it more permanent. So the community, through all the engagement, said, we want something that we can go and fish and play and not have these huge structures and structured recreation. We're pretty excited that we want to protect the resource, teach people about it, and offer opportunities to use that river. We are asking for $600,000, or the $600,000 project, $300,000 of which we're asking for assistance. The total project, if we would do the entire park, is about $3 million. In 2018, the City Council approved Phase 1, and that's a prairie restoration, which will begin in spring. This would only enhance if we could get the parking lot and have some kind of a shelter for a bathroom facility for people to use the park.
And so I don't quite understand. This is a county park or a city park?
It is a city park, but the county asked us to preserve it as a regional park. They couldn't help us financially, but they would help us apply for grants and be supportive of it. And we accept that.
And have they applied for grants for you?
They have not yet. We have done it all. And so in the information, we do have a letter from the county with support.
Yes, and what does that buy? I'm struggling with this. I've heard since January now, I've heard that so many people support so many projects and so forth, but I've never seen a letter with a check in it. I think I've heard of one project where they did offer in-kind support with things that they have. And so it's just a little thing that's kind of stirring me up a little bit as we come closer to the end. But so this park is a standalone park that used to be the county's, but now it's the city's, and now the city is trying to make it open for more people to have fun in.
Madam Chair, it is not a county park. It never was. It was privately owned. So the city went through the development process, asked the developer to give us that land in exchange for parkland credits. So we secured the 93 acres through development, but the development never happened. The county came and asked us if we would preserve that, and we were going to regardless of the counties. It's absolutely a beautiful piece of property. The city is part of the St. Cloud Area Regional Trail System, so St. Joseph has a Wobegon Trail. We have started the connection from the Wobegon going south to this park, so people will be able to get to this park from the Wobegon, and we also will have access to the Glacier Lakes Trail, which goes to Ricori. So I think this is a huge park for us to develop. It could be a regional center for people to gather at.
Okay. And who is going to be the fiscal agent on here? Is this the... Is DNR the one that you're working with on
Madam
development?
Chair, it is the city that is
it
doing
is the
it.
City.
It is the city. Okay. And we collect the half-cent regional sales tax, and we do have the money set aside for the first phase of this, or for the second phase, because the first phase is a restoration.
And have you made any application to budget management at all?
Madam Chair, we have. This is part of the we did it last year.
Okay. That's all my questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Representative Vang.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes.
Representative Vang moves approval of the minutes of the March 21st meeting that's in our packets. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted as printed. Representative Demuth, House File 1322.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing House File 1322. This bill seeks an appropriation of $1,130,000 to construct the Phase 3 completion of the Ricori Trail. This trail links the three cities of Richmond, Cold Spring, and Rockville. The Ricori Trail connects with the State Glacial Lakes Trail in Richmond that extends west to Willmar. The completion of this project would finish the connection between Cold Spring and Rockville. Future connections to the east would include Lake Wobegon Trail, Beaver Island, and Bonanza Valley. The Ricori Trail Construction Board has secured more than $4 million to date. The trail is used all year round. It provides a safe alternative mode of transportation for both bikers and pedestrians. It runs along the very busy Highway 23. And with your permission, Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to my testifier, Kevin Mooney.
Mr. Mooney.
Madam Chair, Committee, thank you for having us today. 15 years ago, my daughter was 7 years old. Today, she is 22 years old and a teacher at Pelican Rapids High School. That's how long we've been working on the trail. We started in 2004. The cities of Rockville, Richmond, and Cold Spring got together to form a joint powers committee to explore the opportunities of connecting the three cities together via a railroad an abandoned railroad track that ran through our communities. Well, since that time, we have accomplished to purchase the entire corridor, so we own all the land involved in this, and we have managed to construct 5.1 miles of trail. Now we've come to our pinch point. It is the area between busy four-lane State Highway 23 and the Sauk River, and the railroad figured out a way to fish between those two entities. So we're going to try to put a trail through there right now. And that's what we're trying to do. This is the final gap closure of the trail. It will connect the city of Rockville and the city of Cold Spring. We also have some regional significance because our trail really does butt up against the Glacial Lake State Trail, which continues west towards Wilmer. So it's kind of a crucial little spot there to extend the Glacial Lake State Trail as well as our local trail to almost 60 miles in total length. And we're looking forward to getting towards the end of it. We have we are shovel ready. The design is complete. The property, the corridor is purchased. We're just needing construction money to continue forward. We have secured $812,000 from the federal TAP program. So what we're looking for is completion money of this trail.
That's
1.13 is correct. And we'll be ready to rock. Any questions, Chair?
No, we understand.
Awesome.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Representative Bierman, 2164, on Arena, Lakeville. Representative Bierman, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. Thank you very much for letting me introduce 2164. Arenas and trails, that's what you're hearing a lot of today, and this is another arena. Ames Arena down in Lakeville, one of the meccas of the region for hockey, and I just wanted to pleased to present my testifier here, Mr. Shane Ratcliffe. He is the arena manager, and he'll be able to give you an update on the extensive renovation of this arena, and we're seeking support for some of that, please.
Mr. Ratcliffe.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me. As indicated, I'm the manager of the Lakeville Arenas down there in Lakeville. Let me start by giving you a little history of how we got here. Lakeville Ames Arena, there's a need in the late 80s for ice, obviously more in the South Metro. And after a few failed referendums, a group of businessmen got together, created the Lakeville Community Corp, which was an organization, 501c nonprofit. Along with the Lakeville Hockey Association, they went to the city of Lakeville and asked to build an ice arena. The city agreed to back the bonds, but they wanted nothing else to do with it as far as the operating expenses, maintenance, things like that. So when it went through with it, and happy to say that things have worked out well. We opened Ames Arena in 1994, and we're busy as all get out. Similar to the city of South St. Paul, we maximize our usage during the off season. We have one sheet that runs year-round. Our second sheet we pull out for about 4 months in the spring, and we have dry floor events, home shows, trade shows, kids sales, things like that. And, you know, we try to maximize revenue as much as we can. We operate independently of the city and the school district with our own financial backing, our own reserve fund, things like that, and operate entirely through user fees and contributions from our hockey association. And it's gone well. I am happy to announce that in August of this year, we'll be making our final debt payment on the original building from 1994, so it'll be entirely paid off. But, as you know, after 25 years, the building is starting to show its age. All of our major mechanicals have reached their end of life. Right now, we're looking at about $7.5 million in repair items that need to be done. Our ice plant, our ice floors, dasher boards, our roof, dehumidification, things like that. Right now, we're asking for $1.65 million towards the project. But we also have local support as well. We just signed literally just 2 weeks ago with our local hockey association, our figure skating club. They've contributed and agreed to $80,000 a year for the next 10 years to help go towards the arena improvements as well. So we're all about partnerships here. You know, we're not looking for just a straight handout. We're looking for another partner to be involved in this organization and help us, you know, continue to strive for another 20 years. With that, are there any questions?
Are you looking for being part of the 2019 bill or the 2020 bill?
Well, we'll take the money. We're starting the planning for right now. The planning is to do it in 20, and we're starting the planning phases of it right now. The design work, we'd like to get started in 19 on it. So we're ready to go. A lot of it is timing with these projects as far as trying to minimize the effect on our users. So we want to be ready to go by the 1st of May of next year so that way we can do it during our slower season.
Okay, thank you. Representative
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who's the current owner of the property and buildings?
The City of Lakeville owns the building.
Okay, the city owns it. I thought I was getting confused with the 501c3 part of it, and so
that's what manages it.
Okay, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Representative Lilly, Representative Cagle. I don't know why there's two bills.
Three
bills for the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. You had such good publicity earlier in the session that you decided you had to come back and try again and again and again and again.
And again.
Okay, let's go.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members.
Hi, guys.
Good morning. So the bills are similar, but they're so the concept is pretty straightforward. Mine essentially asked for $5 million to go to the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and the $5 million, just to be clear, the Amateur Sports Commission doesn't get anything from this. They're just helping pass out the grants. They're not getting any money. They have their own requests for other funds. But so this goes to the Freon problem, the R22. It was decided that's one of the worst problems with some of the pressure on our ozone. So it's in 2020, it'll be totally banned to be used in repair. You know, so if you have any facilities that need repair or anything, it'll just totally shut down the coolant, so they have to do new type cooling. So that's what essentially it is. I'll just pass it to Representative Cagle. She can kind of overlap. Are you going to give us 15 minutes for the three of them?
No, we've got 4 minutes for all three.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As a former hockey player, you know, I'm proud to bring this bill forward. And just since I have the mic in front of me, I want to give a little shout out to the Bulldogs who beat St. Cloud State in the NCHC tournament this weekend. my bill would appropriate $2 million to the James Benson Mighty Ducks program. And again, it would be used to improve indoor air quality and then replace that R22. And one thing I like about this bill is that in order to qualify for the grants, they have to give at least 50% of the prime ice time to female teams, which for anybody who's had a hockey practice at 5 a.m. in the morning, that prime time is pretty vital. So with that, I'll turn it over to the testifier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives. My name is Neil Ladd. I'm the Deputy Executive Director for the National Sports Center. And if I may, this morning, I'd like to give you a brief historical background on the grant program and then give you a few current stats for perspective.
No, we don't need that. We need to know what his $500,000 is going to buy and what her $2 million is going to buy and what Representative Juergens, how much that is going to buy. That's what we need to know. And we understand, we know about Freon, and Freon can't be anymore. We know that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Basically, what you're going to be looking at is HVAC systems, gasoline, Zambonis, horse systems. You've heard them mentioned here earlier today. Those would be replaced. Direct systems and indirect systems for ice arena plants would be replaced. And
all over the state or correct. Just at the...
All over the state.
Oh,
so it's a grant program. So the arenas would come to the sport or to the commission and apply for the grants in order to replace either the Zambonis or the coolant systems in their own ice rinks in their communities.
Possibly Hermantown.
I see, and Proctor and Two Harbors and Lakeside.
Madam Chair, that's exactly the problem. There's states all or rinks all over the state that need this, and the Amateur Sports Commission really doesn't. They're not benefiting, and the Blaine facility isn't benefiting. They're helping facilitate the need all over the state, and
the Blaine facility does not have Freon anymore.
No, we Madam Chair, we currently do have R22, and we are looking at
still.
We still do, and we're looking at alternatives such as ammonia and other Freon options.
When are you going to decide that?
Well, we're in line with everybody else to get one of these grants.
How many How many applications do you anticipate?
In 2016, I actually have all the stats here. 2016, we were 60 applicants. We awarded $6.5 million. There was just over $8 million in requests. We anticipate between another 60 to 80 requests immediately.
So these are the local hockey associations that are running their little arenas to get their money for that kind of thing.
Madam Chair, I think there's been like 79 grants or something that have gone out. And a couple of years ago, there was money bonded for this, but then it was pulled back. So the need hasn't gone away.
But this is bonding money now?
That's correct.
Yes. Thank you. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just a question. Who will be able to apply for these grants? I'm just asking because there's a hockey arena in my district, but that's owned by the Minneapolis Public School District, and it's been dormant for the last few years. And I'm just curious, who will be able to apply for these grants?
Madam Chair, Representative, the public agencies, the entities, the communities themselves will be able to apply. We believe there's 264 sheets of ice in the state of Minnesota, 191 ice arenas. Of those, there's 30 direct systems, 134. So 164 ice arenas in the state of Minnesota will be able to apply.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Ladd, will you share those statistics with
absolutely
with us so we can have that when we're deliberating?
There's currently 260, Madam Chair, there's currently 264 ice sheets in the state of Minnesota, 191 ice arenas, so some arenas.
But will you share the paper with us?
Oh, absolutely.
The information on the paper with us, yes. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And, Madam Chair, if I missed this, I'm sorry. But what is the average cost per arena of replacing?
Madam Chair, Representatives, depending on the type of system that you have, indirect and direct, those are the two that are out there right now. If you're replacing your complete system, so that's your tower, your chiller, your piping, and the refrigerant itself, the range is between $900,000 and $1.75 million.
And how many arenas?
The grants are, huh?
Madam Chair? How many arenas? 160?
264 sheets, and 164 of them need to be serviced. We have a big problem.
A lot of money.
Madam Chair, I just want to mention that my grandson started playing on recently close to here over at Johnson Arena, and hockey is changing very much. It's very, you know, there's a lot of young girls that are in his team, on his team, and they're together, and then a very diverse group, Asian youth, actually a couple Somalian kids. It's pretty neat what's going on there.
Thank you very much. Representative Juergens.
Thank you.
I was told your bill is different, but
thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1812 is similar to what you just heard, but there's a big difference that I'd like to point out. I don't need to get into all the history of the Mighty Ducks program. You already heard that. What this bill does is a total of $5 million. $4 million of that is general obligation bonds. That funding would be very similar to the two that you just heard, but also includes $1 million in cash so that municipalities that are undergoing the changeover from R22 Freon to ammonia that already have started that after January 1st of 2017 when there was no Mighty Ducks funding, that they could apply for the grant program through the amateur sports commission just like the projects going forward. So there's $1 million in there in retroactive funding that would be applied for. And I've got a testifier. We'll get to Zach Doctor. He's a park and rec director from Cottage Grove. But this is not an earmark of any kind. This is statewide.
And who would distribute this?
The Amateur Sports Commission, just like they would with what you just heard.
I see. So $1 million cash, and then Cottage Grove would, because they've already gone before?
They could apply for it. This is not an earmark for Cottage Grove or any other city.
And what? No. Welcome. Mr. Doctor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As Representative Juergens mentioned, Cottage Grove is in the same boat as the other 100-plus arenas that need to replace their refrigeration system. And we actually just broke ground on a $2.3 million project to replace two sheets of ice about 3 weeks ago. So simply just looking for the opportunity for those communities that forged ahead with their projects. These are mandated repairs because of the expiration of R22 Freon. So just looking for retroactive funding for those program or those communities that did forge ahead with their projects to better their community, better better the environment, and follow those mandated changes.
Thank you. Mr. Ladd, we're going to have contact sometime Thursday. Your availability on with Ms. sometime maybe on Thursday.
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to help.
Because is that in your statistics, too, of how many arenas have already made their transitions to the new kind of...
Madam Chair, members...
Facility, cooling, whatever they have to have.
That is correct. So there was 264 sheets of ice. 100 of them have already made the transition to different types of refrigeration systems. So there's roughly 164 remaining sheets.
$1,000 piece. That's what you're asking for, Representative Juergens.
Yeah, Madam Chair, as you can tell from the dollars that we're talking about, the $5 million that we're asking for, and I believe that's what Representative Lilly was asking for as well, that just scratches the surface of what the need is. It's just that it's not going to fully fund, but it'll just help.
Thank you.
Anything else?
That's it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Eklund. We've got two bills that we can shave some minutes off of. House File 214, brand new one, or first time up one almost, first day, first weeks, a 2019 idea, right?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair. We are on the ball.
Let's go with it. Tell us what you need.
Madam Chair, thank you, members. Thank you for the time. House File 214 is the bill for $1 million to expand the Voyager Country ATV connections in Orr, Ash River, Cabotogama, and International Falls. The Voyager Country ATV Club is one of the fastest-growing ATV clubs in Minnesota. ATV trail riders are becoming more important to northeastern Minnesota tourist industry every day. Here to testify on behalf of the bill is Bruce Besty, president of the Voyager Country ATV Club.
Thank you for volunteering your time, Mr. Besty.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair, committee representatives. My name is Bruce Besty. I'm from Crane Lake, Minnesota. I own a small resort in Crane Lake called Cabins on Crane. I'm also here representing the Voyager Country ATV. Our membership is around 800 ATV enthusiasts, including 72 local businesses. We're building an ATV trail system connecting our communities, our local communities. Core system is Orr to Crane Lake to Portage to Cook. Currently, you have a map. Our trail system consists of 220 miles of trails, forest roads, mapped and signed for guests to come up and ride. We're excited that in September we are hosting the ATVAM State Ride Rally, September 20th to the 22nd. That should bring a lot of riders into our area. Our membership businesses and the communities of Orr, Ash River, Cabotogama, Little Fork, and International Falls wish to connect our core trail system. So our plan is to connect northward and connect with the Blue Ox Trail. We currently have connections to down at Cook to the Quad Cities Trail System being developed and over at Ely to the Prospector Loop Trail System. Today we're requesting $1 million in bonding. St. Louis County is our fiscal sponsor. Cochise County is supporting our efforts as we work towards International Falls. Thank you.
Mr. Bestie, some of this we can't bond for planning and permitting. So how, what's your match?
We'll be seeking a match from the ATV dedicated account that can be used for some of those.
Okay. And when they come to your area to go from Crane Lake up to Cook County or to wherever they're going, do they have to have their own machines?
Currently, yes, you bring your own machines. I would imagine that there's going to be some new business development in the way of rentals.
Do they ever give rides?
I'm sure if you want to ride at Voyager Country ATV, I can guarantee that we'll get you one.
We do several tours. We can have machines available, absolutely.
All right. Any questions? Representative Considine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there a speed limit, and are the vehicles mufflered?
Second part of the question, sir.
Are there mufflers on these machines?
Yes. I don't know of any machines that aren't stock machines. Be very, very few of anything that somebody, you know, doesn't have the proper equipment on them.
There are legal decibel limits that the stock machines come with.
Thank you, Representative Eklund. Yes. Are there speed limits on the trails?
On the speed limit on the trails, the trail system kind of imitates or follows the county ordinance, which is safe and reasonable speed, which is kind of preferred. Just because based off trail conditions and weather.
So the answer is no.
Are they all year round?
Well, our trail systems would be open all year round except for they're using combined snowmobile trail access, which would be then closed between December 1st and April 1st. And when there's logging operations, that there's temporary closures because of trucks.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Eklund, House File 2108 for 2020. Representative Eklund, for the 2020 bill.
Madam Chair, we're going to do the prep work for this project in 2019, so it'll be ready for funding in 2020.
What's your ask?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2108 and members is a bill that will help the Township of Crane Lake develop a campground and visitor center for entering into Voyageurs National Park. We are requesting $2,475,000. Crane Lake is one of four gateway communities of Voyageurs National Park, and it is also a gateway through many services to the Quetico Wilderness Area. Crane Lake is the only gateway to Voyageurs National Park that currently does not have a visitor center. And we're working with the Park Service and others to develop plans for this visitor center. And that's what this campground and development is all about. Here to testify on behalf of the bill is Katie Congdon from the Township of Crane Lake.
Ms. Congdon, welcome. Please clarify your ask.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We're asking for the town of Crane Lake. The town of Crane Lake is home to some very lucky year-round residents and also serves some new and return guests visiting the Voyageurs National Park, the BWCA, and the Quetico Provincial Park. Nearly 50 years ago, at the birth of the Voyageurs National Park, our community was identified as one of the four visitor contact centers at the four entrances to the park. Three of these entrances have been built in International Falls, Cabotogamont, Ash River. Crane Lake is the only one that does currently not have a visitor center. On page 2 of the handout in front of you, you can see on the map All three of them are towards the northern and middle area of the park. Crane Lake is at the very southern tip. The Township of Crane Lake has received, has had several community action plans and public hearings with the assistance of the National Park Service, the University of Minnesota, and the State Department of Tourism. In every plan over the years, the importance of finally establishing a visitor center and the campground in the town has been at the forefront of those meetings. The town has worked diligently with the past and current superintendent to establish the center. With assistance from the LCCMR, the town has purchased the land for the center and the campground, which includes over 30 acres. In addition, the Minnesota DNR has purchased the land for the boat ramp and lake access immediately adjacent to the visitor center and campground area. Madam Chair, in front of you is our plan for the visitor center, the DNR boat ramp, and the campground. As you review, it has improvements as well. Bill HF 2108 requests $2.475 million for the site work in preparation for the campground. This is part of an estimated total project cost of $6.2 million, and we are seeking other funds, including further contributions from the township and federal funding as well. In long term, we are negotiating a lease to the Park Service through the General Service Administration, similar to the lease at International Falls.
Representative Eklund, who built the other three centers?
The Park Service built the two at Ash River and Cabotogama, the new one, and then the main one at the visitor center in International at Rainy Lake. They did. The most recent one was built in the city of International Falls, where the park headquarters is at, and that was built through a contract through GSA, similar to what Ms. Congdon's talking about. So the city of International Falls actually owns the visitor center, and the Park Service is leasing it back from them.
Are they doing the maintenance too?
The city of International Falls provides the cleaning services. I know. I don't know about the maintenance contract with the visitors with the Park Service on that.
And Representative Eklund, why should the state make this investment?
Well, because Madam Chair, Crane Lake is one of the largest amounts of visitors going through the Crane Lake area, and we're working with the federal government to help secure funding for that, but that's sometimes a tough push, and so we're looking into the state to help City of Crane Lake out and kind of put the Park Service into the position that they need to help fund this thing. And the federal government, Madam Chair, not just the Park Service.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I understand that Crane Lake was one of four that were designated as entries by the Park Service, and yet they're the only one that has not gotten any help from anybody?
That's correct, Representative Considine, Madam Chair. They have some Park Ranger staff that lives there seasonally, but are they year-round, the Ranger staff, no?
They are there year-round.
Okay, they're year-round. No, they were seasonal, but there's no permanent park staff that can allow visitor assistance because the rangers are out patrolling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the time.
See what happens.
All right.
Representative Hansen, 2652.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2652 is a small appropriation for the Serbian Cultural Center of Minnesota, located in South St. Paul. It is asking for cash to help with this unique part of Minnesota history. I have with me Alex Domenovich, who is with the Serbian Cultural Center of Minnesota.
Mr. Stojminovic,
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. That's excellent pronunciation.
Please.
Thank you for providing me with this opportunity to test the founders for this wonderful historic establishment. My name is Alex Temanovic, and I'm a president of the Serbian Cultural Center of Minnesota, a nonprofit organization. I'm here to ask you to support our cause in rehabilitating this extraordinary building. We want to make sure it's safe for visitors to view the historic contents of the museum, as well as to use the building as a cultural community center in South St. Paul. This three-level, 9,000-square building was built in 1924 by Serbian immigrants, and it was added to the National Historic Registry in 1992. The lower level consists of an open area, long bar, kitchen, and a raised stage for a band. The upper level is entirely covered with oak hardwood floors, featuring 45-foot theater stage and 25-foot ceiling height. There is a large balcony above overlooking the entire floor. On the exterior, it is a classic brick structure with large concrete steps in front and a welcoming Serbian home engraving. We need fire suppression system, heating and air conditioning, updated plumbing, and brick tuck pointing in order to keep visitors safe. But there's more value to this hall than it's just architectural beauty. We all know the saying, you can't make old friends. The same thing goes for this building. We can't build an old Serbian hall. We can't recreate all the memories that were made in this wonderful establishment. We can't recreate the history of this building. I recently invited my friends and family to visit the hall and catered the event through a local restaurant in South St. Paul. The owner, Carol Hansen, came in as her staff was bringing in the food and shared with us that she had gotten married in the hall 30 years ago. That's just a small example of the significance of this hall for many Minnesotans throughout the state. The hall's contents vary from family photos of immigrants from 100 years ago to Orthodox Christian icons and medals and photos of fallen Serbian American soldiers. There are simply too many items for me to mention in this presentation. We need a professional museum curator to catalog all the items. Of course, the central theme of this hall is Serbian immigrants of the United States. In the 90s, Serbia and the U.S. Until the 90s, Serbia and the U.S. have always been allies. Serbia chose to fight alongside the United States when many other European countries did not. Serbian Hall is a monument of that cooperation. 100 years ago, the United States of America officially celebrated July 28, 1918 as Serbia Day. Over the White House and other public institutions waved the Serbian flag for the first time. Other than the American and Serbian flags, only one other has been flown over the White House. That was the French flag. Serbian Hall was built 6 years after Serbia Day. 26 years later, during a bombing campaign over Romanian oil fields in 1944, hundreds of American airmen were shot down in Nazi-occupied Yugoslavia. Local Serbian farmers and peasants risked their own lives to give refuge to the down to the soldiers while they were waiting to for rescue of 500 U.S. airmen. I recommend the book written by Gregory Freeman, The Forgotten 500, the untold story of men who risk all for the greatest rescue mission of World War II, Operation Halyard. Many of those same men that saved Americans were executed by communists after the war ended. Many that escaped immigrated to this country. Those that made their way to Minnesota found their food and lodging at the Serbian Hall. There are many documents in this building about those families. We have not opened all the boxes in fear that things will be damaged or lost. Rehabilitating the Serbian Hall will go a long way to remind us of Serbian-American cooperation for over a century. Yes.
Thank you very much. You are asking for money. You are the owner of the Serbian Hall.
I'm the president of the Serbian Culture Center of Minnesota, and they own the hall.
The Serbian Cultural Center,
yes,
owns the hall.
The hall, yes.
Ms. Dyson, what is the process that this committee has to consider if we wanted to fund pre-design and equipment and construction and furnishing the center?
Madam Chair, the bill is asking for general fund money, and that works fine for grants to non-governmental entities for capital projects. And if included in the capital investment omnibus bill, it would be subject to the same four-year time frame for use of the grant funds, but it would not be subject to the type of restrictions that apply to general obligation bonds.
And Representative Hansen, usually we have pre-designed design and then another time we have construction, but you just want $300,000 to do all of it. And so there would be no repeat request. Is that my understanding?
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is correct. I listened very closely to the chair earlier in a committee where she said she was looking for cash projects, and this would be a good project to get it done. And we would certainly invite the committee or the chair alone to visit the Serbian Hall and see the cool stuff. It really does need some care right now because there are bricks that are falling off. We're worried about the water and the HVAC damaging the artifacts that are in there because of the age.
Thank you very much. I understand. I might have talked about cash, but I don't know that I was looking for cash projects to add because, and for sure I'm not looking for cash projects now because it's determined how much cash I have, we have, and that is only $10 million. Members of the committee, Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll make this quick. I just want to say I have read that book, The Forgotten 500. It's excellent, so I want to recommend it to our committee. And also thank the testifier and the Serbian people for what they did for our soldiers. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry we had to cut it short, but our time is over, and there's another committee coming in. Members, tomorrow evening we are scheduled to begin at 6:30 p.m. in room 5, and that will be the last time we listen to projects that are to come before us. On Thursday morning, we will discuss the next step. This meeting is adjourned.